Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Bigfoot and Company. This is Dr. John Stamey along with Matt Delf, and we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest today, one of my favorite people, one of my three favorite people, and you'll know why in just a minute. First of all, I wanted to say greetings to Matt, and how are you doing? What you been up to in the Bigfoot world since last week?
I'm doing great. I've just been working, did a little weekend trip over to Smoky Mountains in Gatlinburg, but other than that, just hanging tight, waiting to get back out into the woods.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's getting really warm down here in Myrtle Beach. If you want to come down here, we'll head on out to the Francis Marion Forest. Now, I've heard scary stories out there, so we might want to think about that twice, but I know it's going to be good weather up there, and you can go hunting Bigfoot and see if you and the big guy can talk and hang out a little bit. I know that would be fun, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. You know I'm up for the adventure.
I know you are. You've been up for it since you were like 19, I think. But anyway, we are always glad to have you. You're a great co-host, and looking forward to having you at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, which will be April the 27th in Clayton, Georgia, at the Rabun County Civic Center. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. We've got you. We've got Angelia Shear. We've got John Dixon from Tennessee MUFON. We've got a lot of great guests, and we're going to have a wonderful time. The folks in Clayton, Georgia, are really, really excited about this event. I was walking up and down the street on Friday with some posters in my hand, and you know, everybody recognized me. I don't know if maybe they've got my picture at the post office, Matt, but everybody recognized me and wanted a poster, so it was great. So just looking forward to being there on the weekend of April 27th, and you will be there too as our co-host, as we have a grand time in the world capital of Georgia Bigfoot, which is Clayton, Georgia, and Rabun County. So anyway, good to have you here, and I want to welcome one of my three favorite Bigfoot people. The She-Squatchers are some ladies that I came to know and have become very fond of. What great ladies. They were the guest stars of the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference in 2018 in Kingsport, Tennessee. And I am pleased to announce, after a little bit of wrangling and finagling, the She-Squatchers will be headlining the Fall Georgia Bigfoot Conference, which will be the weekend of October the 19th in Clayton, Georgia. So we got all that worked out, and it'll be great having them down there, all three of them, because there are three of them. There's Jenna, there's Jen, and there's Tammy. Today, we are pleased to have Jenna Grover, one of the fabulous She-Squatchers, with us. How are you doing this afternoon?
Boy, hello, hello, hello. I first have to say hello to everybody listening. My name is Jenna. I'm one of the She-Squatchers. Thank you so much. It was a wonderful introduction, and I am doing fabulous. Thank you so much for having me on, John.
You're welcome. We're glad to have you here, and we got a lot of great stuff we want to talk about because you have been out in the woods your fair share, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely, as much as I can get out, that's for sure.
Right, and I was speaking with your one of your fellow She-Squatchers, Jen Cruz, this morning, and she's very excited to have you. I know you're on a short trip, but you're going to be returning, and she's looking forward to the three of you getting back out there and having a grand time and talking to Bigfoot, because that's what you
do.
And it's going to be good.
Well, yeah. You know, I winter Texas, you know, I'm in Texas because I am a winter Texan. So poor Jen is back in that terribly cold weather, but I'm here and I've got two more weeks before I head home, and that's when all the fun is going to begin. And I'm so excited, and I'm sure Jen told you about what we're going to be doing. And so you were going to ask a question. I'm so sorry. I just interrupted.
No, that's okay. So anyway, have you had any opportunity down in Texas to do any Bigfoot hunting, or are you just waiting to get back and all? Or have you had any psychic adventures down there?
You know, the biggest psychic adventure that I've been having down here is, and I don't know if you all know much about Galveston Island, but there was a storm in 1900 and the whole island was pretty much demolished. And there's so much, I mean, basically it is an island over death. And I know that sounds really horrible, but so many hundreds and thousands of people have died here. So the spirits wise, there are so much, there's so much activity going on. You go into a lot of these old buildings and they've got the old homes. A lot of the old homes didn't make it, but the ones that did, which are very few and far behind between, I should say, they are restoring them and they're absolutely gorgeous. But wherever you go, it feels like you're walking through portals. And I'm not kidding you, because even my mom experiences that. I'm like, wow, did you just feel the earth move? And she's like, yeah, I did. You know, so, I mean, everywhere you go, if you have any, if you are, if you feel energy at all, if you're sensitive at all, if you come down to Galveston Island, you will definitely have quite the experiences, because there are spirit, there's spirit all over the island. So, I mean, just walking into portals and walking in through spirit is constant. So I guess that's the biggest psychic thing that I've been going through here. And
well, that sounds interesting. I'd like to go down there. I did some marketing research one time on Galveston, and it looked very intriguing. But with the all the things that you've told me, I think it'd be a great adventure to go check out.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Absolutely. Now I want to ask you a question, because a lot of folks know who you are. They know you're involved with the She Squatchers. But do you mind starting out and giving us a little bit of your background about how you got started with the She Squatchers?
Sure. Well, Jen Cruz and I, she's the founder of the She Squatchers. She had not even mentioned that she was part of a team, the She Squatchers. And one day I went over to visit her at her work, and we were talking, and she started telling me about going out into the woods, and she started a team where they're going to go look for Bigfoot. And I was like, oh. I mean, I think I was just like, I had my hands up, like, begging, like a dog would beg, like, oh, pick me, I want to go, you know. And I told Jen, I said, I've got to be part of this, this sounds so much fun. And at the time, you know, I am not a believer in Bigfoot, you know, I'm a total skeptic, but I was thinking, okay, I want camaraderie, I'm looking for exercise, I want to get out in nature, you know, I've been in town for so long, I just crave nature, because I grew up on a farm. So I told Jen, I said, I've got to be part of this team. So needless to say, after that first venture that they had, and after Jen told me about it, I was hooked line and sinker. And so I was a She Squatcher ever since. And I'm so happy, because I've been having so much fun doing it. We've met the best people. And we've, I mean, honestly, I still can't say I'm 100% believing in Bigfoot. Not that I don't believe in Jen, not that I don't believe in the evidence that we found, but would I risk my life? No. But I am teetering so far into the 90s percentage of believing in Bigfoot, because I really do feel like it's a flesh and blood creature. I feel like it's a primate. And, you know, there's all these possibilities that can go with it. I mean, for goodness sakes, there's so much going on in our world that we don't even know about, and I just want to be part. And that's another thing I was so excited about. I could be part of a team that could potentially prove the existence of Bigfoot, something that was only a myth. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, we're not only dealing with trying to find Bigfoot. We are discovering, you know, that there are spirit out there, that there's extraterrestrial things going on, things that we as researchers have to figure out. You know, do they go together? Are they separate? You know, so it's a lot of logging information, and this year we're going to be extra good at logging the information. That's my goal.
Well, I know that when you and the She Squatchers went out with Matt Delf up in Tennessee right after the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, you found some evidence, didn't you?
Yes, we did. Well, actually, Matt, and hello, Matt.
Hello.
We we were out with Matt during the day. There were some people who had, and I believe they had spent a little extra money to go out with Matt to
mm-hmm.
go out, what was it, squatching. And luckily, myself and Tammy, we were able to go during the day. I don't think Jen was able to go for some reason. But anyway, we had a wonderful time, and Matt brought us out in this absolutely beautiful area. And he brought us to an area, this tree that he had gone out with someone else. Who was it that you went out there with again, Matt?
It was a group of people back whenever I first got in with Macro.
Okay. Well, we ended up, Matt showed us the area, the tree, and the part of the tree. So I get up there, and I'm looking, because, I mean, boy, he said, you know, he thought that they had hair there before, but I thought, oh, my gosh, I've got to see if this is really happening again. So I went up, I found some hair. Unfortunately, I didn't have the right equipment with me to do everything by the book, so we used what we had. In fact, a gal in the group had said, well, because I, let me stop, I found hair. So I took some hair off of the tree, and I was thinking, where can I put this hair? And I thought, well, maybe I'll just put it in one of these gloves, because I carry plastic gloves with me because, you know, of bugs, of, you know, things you can get for plants and things, and just all sorts of reasons. It's really smart to have gloves on. So I thought, well, maybe I'll stick them in there. And a gal from the group said, well, why don't you just, do you have any tape? If you have tape, you could just stick it to the tape. And I thought, oh, girl, remember her? Remember her, Matt? She was so smart.
yes, I remember.
Yes, so I told her that you have such a good idea. So I stuck the hair onto the tape, and then we brought it with us. Now, we gave that evidence to you, Dr. John. Did you happen to do anything with that?
I have had two false starts with that so far, and I'm looking for someone. It's been a little bit difficult to find someone that can do DNA analysis and will really take this project seriously. I've had that problem, so I've talked with two people. Both of them are pretty well known, but I was not able to get that. If you guys have found somebody, I'd love to get that to you and another sample that I have acquired. So, I mean, I've got two samples, and I checked, and I was told that they'd be fine. You know, the age of the sample, you know, a year and a half is not going to cause a problem. That's what I was told.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not worried about that, but I do want to get that for analysis. I thought I had a really good shot here about 2 months ago, but that didn't work out. But anyway, we'll see what happens. And yeah, well, we are kind of getting an idea about what we might find anyway, because of looking at the work of Dr. Melba Ketchum. And does that name ring a bell, Jenna?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she has the Bigfoot DNA website, and she's done a lot of analysis. And in fact, one of her co-authors, Igor Burtsev, from Russia, is going to be with us at this first Georgia Bigfoot conference by Skype. He will be in Russia,
oh, wow.
But he will be with us, and he will talk a little bit about that. And so we're looking forward to having him. We're going to, of course, Facebook Live that and tape it up so that we can have that for everyone to enjoy. I think it'll be good. Anybody that's got experience with real Bigfoot DNA research, we want to try to tape what they've got to say, and hopefully that'll pan out.
Definitely. Well, I'll you know, and I have not been looking myself. I haven't been looking for anyone to analyze the DNA, just because I thought you were doing it on your side. But in this case, I'm going to. In fact, if anybody is out there listening, if you know of anyone that could help us with this DNA, it really would be pretty cool if you could get a hold of us in some way. Call or email Dr. John, get a hold of us. Let us know if you know someone who can help us, and that would be awesome. Then we can find out together.
Good thing about that hair sample that we found, it had the follicle. It had the end, the root. So that right there was excellent. But I'll be honest with you guys, it doesn't matter if we get it tested or whatever. Unless we know that person that's testing it personally will probably never get the true test results back. That's my take.
Yeah.
That's 10
no.
people.
That is a really good point. That's a very, very good point. Don't not,
or
I mean,
maybe,
it's hard. It's sad to say you can't trust everyone, but you can't trust everyone.
No. No, you can't.
Probably not, especially in this particular subject area, because there's a lot of controversy, and we know we've discussed privately among ourselves the problem with all of this, and so we'll see what we can do. Yes, if anybody knows someone that can help us with a DNA analysis of this, just please let me or the She Squatchers or Matt Delph know. You can find one of us for sure, and we'd be glad to work with you. So just let us know. So anyway, that was a very interesting story, Jenna, about how you began with the She Squatchers. So what have been some of your favorite adventures with the She Squatchers in the last couple of years?
Boy, you know, I have had so many exciting adventures with the She Squatchers, but I have to say, first of all, one of my favorites was, and I don't know if you guys have, I'm sure you guys know who he is, but he's a friend of ours, and his name is Squatchman, and he is an awesome guy, so I'm going to do a shout-out. Hey, Squatchman, how are you doing? Because I miss you. You're awesome. So that was just for Squatchman. Jen and I were coming home. We were driving home from one of the events, and we, you know, wherever we go, we bring, say, camping equipment, because sometimes we want to go find things that are off the beaten path, you know what I mean? And sometimes that requires us to camp. So we had our camping gear, and it's also sometimes less than going to hotels and more fun. So we had been driving back from an event, and I said, Jen, because Jen was one of Squatchman, she followed Squatchman, and we had just met him at this event. And I said, Jen, will you please, please, please text Squatchman and see if he knows of any, like, places we could camp, like any campsites that are, because, you know, you never know. You got to be careful with campsites, especially when there's only two gals. You know what I mean? So she did it. She asked him, and he came back, and he goes, actually, you guys should come over. This place is totally cool. You know, nobody's ever there, and it's my secret spot. And we were like, oh, are you serious? Because, I mean, this guy has pictures, and he's amazing.
Now Jenna,
all, he's got
Jenna
a,
real quick, what state were you in?
Oh, my
I'm
goodness.
I'm not going to ask you to pinpoint, but
I hate to say it. We were so many different states last year. We were gone 3 weeks out of the month, every month. I hate to say it. I don't remember which state it was.
You were in Indiana. You were in Indiana.
Oh,
yep.
Thank you.
Yep,
Matthew,
that's great.
You, good
I know
memory.
Him really well. Yep, I know him really well, Greg.
Oh,
but
Southern
Indiana.
Thank you. See, woohoo! I'm so glad you're here too, Matthew. But so anyway, he told us to go ahead and camp at his campsite. So we went there, and we didn't have anything for a fire because we didn't bring any wood. I mean, he told us, you know, hey, well, I'll bring some stuff out. He helped us light firewood, and we had a fire going. He even helped us set up our tent because we didn't realize it was so big. It was one of Jen's tents. And so anyway, he brings us out to a special spot, and we go hiking a little bit. And as we're hiking, you know, he's showing us the different things that he's found, the different evidence. He brought us to a couple of different structures. So, and a couple of those were teepee. I think we've got, they look like more of a teepee structure. We do have pictures of those out on our website, so you can go ahead and go out on our website and see pictures of that. But anyway, as we continued, we saw one of the him and his son would go out, and they would go camping in the middle of the woods, and then they would try to communicate with Bigfoot. Well, when we went back to the place that he was going to show us where him and his son would go camping, it was demolished. It was destroyed. And he was just so, I mean, he was so hurt. He was like, God darn it. I'm sure it was much different words than that. But he was really disappointed that his structure that him and his son built demolished. So anyway, we started on the way back. And all of a sudden, Jen said, because we've got, like, headlamps, we've got two flashlights and our camera. That's about it. And I didn't have my camera, Jen did. Jen said, you know, that looks like a handprint. And Squatch Man and I, you know, we looked where she was looking and pointing, and I thought, no way could that be a handprint. Well, we went up because it was a log that had fallen over, and it was a huge tree. I shouldn't say a log. A huge tree that had fallen over and print. And I thought, no way, that's that white dust that forms on trees. And I thought, that's ridiculous. So, of course, my senses tell me, look real close. And I looked really close, and I thought, oh, wow, that's sand. I mean, if you would have hit this thing hard, it would have fallen. You know what I mean? So I was thinking, wow, that's really cool. And then all of a sudden, something inside me said, smell it. And I smelled it. And it smelled like rotten fish, like snails, like, you know, just that fishy, fishy smell. And we have pictures of this and on our website. And you have to go check it out because it was a huge, huge handprint. But the coolest thing, and this is where I started teetering on along the lines of starting to believe in Bigfoot, was because of that handprint. Because there were dried up riverbeds there that were dried up, but they were still wet on the bottom. And that to me says that anything could have been digging to get the snails, to get the worms, to get the, you know, all those things that live under that soil. So to me, it made a lot of sense. And that was one of my favorite times. Greg is such an awesome guy, and he was such a gentleman, and he took care of us all the way out there. So I can't wait to go back with him. We were supposed to last year, but it got rained out.
Wow, that sounds like a blast. So now, Matt, have you had a chance to go out with Squatch Man, or you're just friends with him?
No, I haven't had a chance. His schedule and my schedule are kind of rough, but I know. I'm friends with him. I know him pretty good. He's got some pretty cool pictures too. But yeah, I like how you said about that smell. And you were talking about being a believer. There's three types. I always like to break the people down to three different types. You got a skeptic who's totally against it, you know. You got a believer who believes it's out there, but they're not 100% because they haven't actually seen it. And then you have a knower, and I happen to fall into the knower category because I've actually witnessed it, and seeing is believing. But I was a total skeptic, but I like how you take the scientific approach, but once you get into the scientific approach, once you go through it more, there's more to it than what you would even imagine. You open up so many different windows, it's crazy. And Greg, he's got some really really cool stuff going on down there in his area, and it's more out of the scientific realm. You wouldn't imagine, you know, some of the stuff with these lights and stuff going on down there. Some pretty crazy stuff where he's at. Did you guys happen to see anything or anything, Jenna?
You know, I don't remember seeing any lights. I was really disappointed because I really wanted to see some lights. But he basically brought us to a lot of the different areas where lights were seen, where Bigfoot were seen, like groups of Bigfoot. And I was so hoping that would be the place. In fact, Jen and I, because we were the only ones in the campground, and Jen and I were sleeping that night, and we talked about, you know, well, what if they come? Because, you know, here's another cool thing. While we were sleeping, let me finish that sentence. What if they come while we're sleeping? But here's the thing. Greg mentioned that he thinks that Bigfoot are healers, that the female Bigfoot are healers. And he said sometimes people will wake up and the females will have their hands on their bodies, and they will walk away from that experience healed in some way. So Jen and I told Jen, I said, oh, please heal me. So I sat out there. I said, if you could hear me, heal me. Yeah, I walked away the same, but gall darn it. Next time, maybe. I left my DNA out there because I got lost in the woods. Jen and Greg were out at the campsite, and I thought, well, I'm just going to take a walk. And so I started walking out in the woods, seeing what I could find, and I was wearing shorts because it was the next day we were heading out. And, yeah, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, I got all scraped up. So my DNA is all over the woods back there. So if I come back, they're gonna know it's me, obviously. Smell all the DNA.
Wow.
So you said the hand smell. And, see, that's how I always knew that the Bigfoot was around whenever I had my encounter. Whenever it was in the area, that smell. And people said that they don't smell nothing, stuff like that, but I know for a fact that it left the smell because I've seen it and it come around then. But, I mean, it could be different with different ones. It could be pheromones. It could be anything. But I like how you noticed, though, because you said that smell. Now, I had found grass beds that smelt that smell. So it kind of makes me wonder, you know, if it's just their scent in general.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I thought about that too, because I've thought, and there's so many different theories, but in my mind I'm thinking, okay, well, as a skunk, you know, and I'm not saying this is what it is, but I'm saying I have thought about these things. Like skunk, if it's startled or if it wants to be protected, you know, protect itself, it gives off that spray, right? What if that smell is similar to that? Another thing is, and I'm not sure if they do cloak, but if they cloak, or if some people mentioned that they could be going through a portal, and if they're looking at you through the portal, you wouldn't smell the smell. And there's so many different things that people talk about, because, you know, when Jen and Nikki and I found that structure, it was amazing. But the one thing that I told Jen is, I don't smell any kind of smell here. There's no hair, there's no footprints, but it was obvious that it was not man-made. Does that make sense? So either it was a structure that they had not been to for quite a long while, and which is why there was no smell, or, you know, maybe that particular group didn't smell. I don't know. What are you guys' thoughts on the smell?
All right, let me jump in and give you some information that we received when we did an interview with Robin McCray. She is a friend of ours from here in South Carolina, and she said that you I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. So she said that many of the Bigfoot have no smell. Some have a lot of smell to them. And she said that she thinks that that's very much of a personal thing with them. Some of them have better hygiene than others.
See, now that sounds like something that I can believe. People smell. People that don't take showers and baths, they reek. People that care for it, you know, take good care of themselves, they don't smell. So it makes sense to me.
So that's just what she said. It makes sense to me too. Now, what were you going to say, Matt?
I was going to say with the smell, though, like I would smell the grass beds, and they would smell, they would stink. But a lot of it might be the diet too of these animals, what they eat. You know, I mean, you got a lot of factors in there, especially like where I was at. It was a creek. And it was wet, muddy in areas, you know, it was really kind of swampy in areas. So if they're always staying wet and then kind of dry a little bit, get mud, just depends. I think it a lot of it's probably some of them stink worse than the others. And it could be a pheromone, you know. I mean, could be something that they release out just to either scare you or maybe during the mating season, or I don't know if they have a mating season, but
it's interesting. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, it's just, you know, you got different factors to factor in there. And I think different types of species, some might smell worse than others.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting, though, that the land, the areas that we are, you know, as the she squatchers are checking out the most is in northern Minnesota. And Minnesota is the land of 10,000 lakes. So maybe ours are a little bit cleaner because they have the ability to with those 10,000 lakes. You know what I mean? So I don't know. But they would definitely have a lot.
Yeah, we'll find it out because the longer we go, the more likely we are that we're going to be in contact with them. And we'll find out the answer to these questions. But I think right now it's interesting to speculate what the answers are, do the best that we can. But when the day comes, and it will come, and I think it might come, I don't think it will be a big spectacular thing. I think it might just be a very calm, quiet thing. But we don't know. Maybe it'll happen in Georgia. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah, I think you know that's a good point. There are a lot of different reasons why there would be a smell or would not be a smell. Robin also said that some of the females would rub flowers on themselves and they would have the scent of flowers. And I thought that was that was very interesting. Yeah.
Very
she was just
interesting.
On last 2 weeks ago, and that was really kind of an interesting thing. So, you know, we'll just have to see. One thing we ought to do is we ought to talk to folks and see how many people that we feel certain have had a Bigfoot sighting or an experience, and how many of them actually experienced that bad smell, and how many experienced no smell or a different smell. I mean, I think that's a good kind of a good research question.
Definitely. And, you know, this year when we travel, I think maybe that is something that we could start looking into or even do a little questionnaire or something that if people want to fill out, if they have had a sighting, you know, just fill something, a little paper out and, you know, give us that information. Did it have a smell? What area were you in? How big was it? How far away were you? What was the weather? You know, things like that. But I know, I mean.
That's a pretty good idea to fill out something. Like if you had like a, you know, that way you'd, you know, because sometimes you forget whenever you're asking somebody, you know, these things. And whenever you're interviewing a witness. But, a lot of those factors, if you wrote them down and kind of had it on a, took notes of, you know, everything, maybe they could, it helped break it down more, especially areas, too, and see if there's any indication, like in this area, they got a smell, this area they don't.
Exactly.
Now, Matt and Jenna, I will send you a PDF of a questionnaire that I made up. That particular questionnaire, I reviewed it with Lyle Blackburn. This was before the Lizard Man Festival. I've just got it kind of out and around. So, I mean, I will definitely, get that to you two, and we'll see what you think.
I'd love to see what you've got down because, I mean, it's true. I wish we all had information from a website, you know, all of us researchers. I wish we could just use one format. You know what I mean? So when we share our information, we could go on that one format. You know what I mean? Oh, it would be so great. But getting back to the smells, I do have to say, I talked to a friend of mine. His name is William Two Feathers. And he was talking about, and I'm bringing this up because Matthew, was it you that explained that the female Bigfoot or Sasquatch would rub flowers on themselves?
That was me.
Oh,
that was John.
Which one of you said that? Okay, that's John.
John.
Okay, sorry, John. So Aborigines, actually, they love these particular, their wieners in oil. And what they do is they'll eat the wieners and they'll rub the stinky wiener oil all over their bodies. And they find it to be very much an act of a very big compliment for them to wipe their armpits on other people. And as bad as that sounds in their culture, it is such an honor. You know what I mean? So I'm wondering if maybe that's something that maybe this, you know, this creature does maybe stinks on purpose and rubs itself on things for, not for its own pleasure, but who knows, you know? Maybe it's to say they're here. Maybe it's to say this is my area. But I love the fact that they're rubbing flowers on themselves, that that's the case.
Yeah, it could be where they're marking their territory, too.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like dogs.
And maybe they... Yeah, and maybe they are rubbing it on them. I mean, like I said, you know, with the Aborigines rubbing that oil on them, and that oil stinker. So, I mean, maybe maybe that's why they stink so bad. They like it. You know, maybe it's us that stink to them. I'm just saying.
Well, it could be.
Because, I mean, if you think about it, too, women, and it's funny because women can be so attracted to a man who's been working out or has been working all day who hasn't worn deodorant, and that pheromone in the sweat, as bad as the BO smells, a woman can be attracted to the pheromone within that sweat. So, I mean, could just be a mating call, too. You never know.
So I should quit wearing deodorant after I work out and be walking around like, hey.
You smell me. You like me?
Make sure you put some on before you come to the conference, Matt, okay?
if I can smell myself, then yeah, I don't think I can handle it.
Oh, that's funny. No, but it's true. I mean, women, before they even see the person, they actually did a study where they had different men, and they would sweat, and they'd rub their sweat, pheromone sweat, all over a card, and women would smell the card, and they'd pick the one that they liked the most. And it turns out, you know, that's how women find men attractive. One of the ways, without seeing them, is, I smell somebody sexy. You know what I mean? I'm just saying. I don't know.
Thanks for letting us know.
That's kind of different, though, for me. If I smell a woman like that, it's kind of a turnoff. But.
Oh, funny.
Well, you know, Matt, we're all different. Isn't that great?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
This is great. This is great. You never know what you're going to have on Bigfoot and Company. That's for sure.
Right.
But you know, that it goes back to one point that I've always made, is that we're not doing enough research. Now don't get me wrong. Going out in the woods is great. But also doing research and collecting data from people who have had experiences, that's a great way to find out more about Bigfoot. And that's why I put together this survey, because, you know, it's an experiencer survey. And you can find patterns in data if you create enough of it. I'm going to tell you a quick story about how I personally know the power of data. When it was Wachovia Bank out of Winston-Salem, they took a lot of data about their clients. And what they did was they picked people. Now, this was in 1998. They picked people over a certain level of income, people who they screened them by the neighborhood they lived in. Yes, not necessarily what would be socially acceptable. They screened them by the neighborhood they lived in. They screened them by their age. They screened them by whether they were married or not. They screened them by a whole number of factors. It was the first time anyone had ever done this in the major banking world. And they did a mailing to everybody on the list. Then they did a mailing to just these select few. I mean, today it seems very commonplace that we would look at people based on a number of different factors. But when they started being selective about the people that they mailed to, their response rate jumped 70%. And now that's a lot of money when you're talking about mailing millions of people or contacting millions of people or asking those personal bankers to call up certain people to see if they need new bank products. So it's a matter of collecting as much data as we can. That's another good form of research. And, you know, I'm a trained statistician. I got my doctorate from NC State, and they gave me 18 hours of statistics. So I know some of the things that we could be looking for in the data. If you folks would like for me to send you a copy of this survey and we start collecting it, once we have about 1,000 samples, of data, or you know, or 1,000 instances of data, we can start seeing patterns, and we might even be able to start determining whose sightings are, quote, real, and whose are speculative. Jenna, is that an appropriate way to put it?
Definitely. I really like your idea. The only thing that I'm thinking is, I hope that people that are going to be filling out this information are going to be doing it for the greater good and not just doing it as a you know, joke. Because you know,
well,
that happens.
You know, but there's only so much you can try to count on from people. I know when I did my doctoral dissertation and I had students filling out questionnaires and everything, I could only hope that they would try and they would do their very best. We didn't have any way of really knowing that, but so we've learned that the more people you have complete a survey or give you information, the more likely you'll find correctness somewhere. You'll be able to screen the outliers. You'll be able to screen the ones that you don't think are correct, because those that are not correct will potentially have certain patterns to the answers that those that are correct do not. So you can only hope, and that's another reason you need to get at least 1,000 questionnaires filled out, is to have enough data to analyze. And there are we've learned a lot of tricks now in the last 20 years in data management, data warehousing, and data analysis. So if we could do this and enlist the help of some Bigfoot researchers across the country, if we get enough data, you know, and I don't mind putting the form online, giving people a password so that they could just give folks a link. Sometimes that's a lot better than trying to carry a form around with you. But we could get a group
Definitely.
Of people to do this, and I think and this is and I'm gonna get on my soapbox and complain for a minute. This is legitimate scientific research. And I do not want anyone that claims to be a scientist to tell me it's not. People have gotten dissertations. They've built careers around this type of research. So, you know, let's see what happens, and let's not bash our research, and whoever you are, we won't bash yours. Fair enough,
Matt?
There
you go.
Excellent.
Yeah, so
I love the idea.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, I'll talk to Lyle. I'll let him re-review it. I'll send it out to you folks, and we'll send it to Jen and some other folks and see what they think. Maybe we'll send it to Lauren Coleman, and we'll just see what people think. If we need to tweak it, then we can go on and move forward
great.
From there.
And you know what I've been thinking about? Oh,
go ahead.
Matt.
Oh, I was going to say, at the Georgia conference, if you could bring a bunch of them, we could have the guests that come in just do a short survey.
Well, I'll bring 200 of them, Matt.
Before I need
Don't
more
worry
than
about that.
I think you're going to need more than that.
Let's hope.
That in itself is going to be amazing, getting this survey out there, whether it is online or whether we hand them out or both. But I did have an idea, and I talked to Jen about this a long time ago, because so many women wanted to be part of the She's Watcher team. And it's really hard to do something, you know, where we can make everyone a She's Watcher. So what I had mentioned to Jen is, wouldn't it be neat? And there's this thing called Zoom. Have you guys heard of it? It's similar to Skype. But Zoom actually lets you have like thousands of people in a meeting, and you can do a share screen and the whole works. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if we got a bunch of the Bigfoot investigators together on Zoom, you know, to share a little bit, or anyone who wants to share their information, you know what I mean? So we could have a place to share, you know, have someone be the meeting, you know, having the meeting agenda, someone taking care of other things, and you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
Yep.
I don't know. I just think we need to really get together a lot more on our what we're finding and on how we're getting the information recorded.
That's another issue. is how do you, you know, a lot of folks that go out in the woods and do really good, legitimate Bigfoot exploration and research, they're not trained how to log data. And, mm-hmm. you know, we can certainly provide, I've got some information on that. I had to learn the hard way. I had to take some courses. I had to do it, and then I learned. So, you know, we can see what we can do to provide resources for Bigfoot explorers so that they can know how to better put their results down.
That is a really good – would you ever consider having – and this is just putting it out there, of course – but would you ever consider having or holding a class, say, on Zoom – or, you know, because Zoom, like I said, you have thousands of people in here. But having a class on, like, say, 1 week you had a class on how to log data. The second week, how to look for print. How to, you know, just all these how-tos. For people who
I'm going to say this. I think what we could do is get a group of people. I could certainly talk about data collection. I know that. But someone like Matt could talk about a particular – we could have a group of people talk about particular mm-hmm. topics that they're good in, and that would involve people, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. And definitely, we could give – because in Zoom, what happens is if you want to join a Zoom meeting, all you need to do is you need to have the Zoom number. And that number can be provided the day of. So if anybody wanted to join, they could just join in. All they'd have to do is look at the number on our different websites or whoever was going to be speaking that day. You know what I mean? I just think it's such an awesome idea because there's so many people who want to get into looking for Bigfoot. They have no ideas on how or, you know, what they should do, what equipment to bring, if they need equipment, what to wear, you know, hunting season, what animals to be looking out for. All of these questions come into play when you're out squatching. So I think this is a really good idea, and I really think we should work on it.
Matt, you want to work on it with us?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I keep getting a lot of messages and people sending me different recordings of different sounds they're hearing in the woods, and they don't know what it is. The big thing, like with me, is I took wildlife conservation courses, and I grew up in the woods hunting, fishing, all that stuff, and I had a pretty good knowledge of what, you know, the different stuff from learning from my grandpa, uncle, dad, you know, being an outdoorsman. But even then, I took a step further and took wildlife conservation courses. So I know how to track, and I can recognize different animal sounds, stuff like that. And a lot of that, I think you have to know all that before you really get out into the field and mm-hmm. start investigating. That way you can determine, okay, eliminate this, eliminate that, and know what you're getting into. Like I said, I've had a lot of messages, and people have sent me recordings. They're like, what is this? I'm like, okay, that's a fox. This is a toad. That's, you know,
yeah.
So, you know, I think that right there is the biggest key, is knowing your wildlife and, you know, knowing what the different sounds and different tracks and stuff like that are. So that way you can weigh everything.
I've got a sound I want you to listen to then, speaking of sounds, Matt. I can't figure this one out, but I think that's a great idea. You know, you're right. People do. There's so much that people need to look into before they even get out there. And you're right. I mean, even with the weather, what, you know, when and when not to go out there, you know, what will happen in the rain, what will happen if it's dry, you know, heat versus cold, animals in the different areas. I just think it's such a good idea.
It is, and I can tell you that one thing that we want Matt to do early on in that is to talk about animals to avoid. You don't want to mess around with a bear, correct, Matt?
Well, correct. I mean, you don't. I don't think bears will. They won't bother you. Now, if you're out in the grizzly territory, that's a different story. That's a different story. But black bears mostly. They are more scared of you than what you are of them. But they will get aggressive. Now, like I said, I've got pictures and stuff. Like, you're talking about the weather. A good time whenever I went out, everybody was, they're like, okay, we went over into the woods, and they're like, you know, it's raining out. It just got done raining. there aren't going to be any bears out. And I'm like, no, that's false. The rain, it enhances the smell of everything. So they're going to be out rummaging for food. And we went out that day, and it was at the edge of the Smoky Mountains, and we seen five bears that day, five black bears.
Wow.
Because after the rain, it drew them out. The smell, it enhanced everything. So, but the bears don't really bother you as bad, but you don't want to come up on a mama and her little ones. They can get aggressive. And some bears, they're kind of like humans, I think, their attitude, you know. They might be having a bad day, and you come across them, and they might want to take it out on you. So I definitely, if you come across a bear, kind of slowly walk away, different direction. Timber rattlers are bad around here in Copperheads. Yeah, you definitely want to know, be on the lookout for the definitely animals to avoid.
Yeah, and especially in the different territories. You know, the animals up here in the Midwest are completely different from the ones down in Texas. You know what I mean? So even if we could find someone, and I'm sorry, we're kind of more having a conversation, but hopefully everybody's enjoying our conversation. But even if
listen,
we could find somebody.
What it's about.
Right?
Please go ahead.
Like Jen said it on our radio show. She goes, boy, it's just like we're having a conversation and people are just peeping in and listening. It was like, oh, yeah, that's kind of what it is. But, no, I was just thinking, you know how many Bigfoot researchers are out there with specialties? One of the people that we talked to, one of his specialties was knowing a lot about the primates, the different parts of the jaws, the muscles, the feet, you know what I mean? So say we could get a hold of him, which I don't remember who it is at this time, but I will remember later. But we could get a hold of different people, or maybe people are listening to this right now and they're saying, hey, I know about this. And if you're really going to do this, I volunteer to lead the discussion in this. You know what I mean? I think it's a great idea.
Greg. Yeah,
hello?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, cause
you there?
I was going to say my weakness is probably mostly plant. You know, I know some, but I'm no expert in, you know, the plants out in the, I learn something new all the time, you know, whenever I'm out with somebody else, and they're talking about plant life out there, stuff like that. So
definitely.
I didn't know that like poison ivy, did you
mm-hmm.
know that antidote usually grows pretty close to it, right beside it? Like,
no, I didn't.
Yeah, to neutralize the aura if you get it on you. Yeah. So, you know, I learn something new all the time. And it's great to have different people in different areas of the field.
Definitely. See, and that's what I mean. And, you know, it would be nice to keep those out there for people to refer to. Maybe, like, upload them down to YouTube or something. Upload them down to YouTube. Well, however you say that. Upload them to YouTube. So anyway, I just think that's such an awesome idea, and then everyone would be able to get in on that. And I mean, if I had a question on what kind of, like you were just talking about, Matthew, what kind of plants should I be watching out for in the Midwest? Well, for us, you know, it would be certain things like poison ivy. There's other thistles. There's things that, you know, for us, and that's one of the reasons why we wear gloves and cover ourselves up to the neck, because it doesn't matter how hot it is or how cold it is, we cannot have some of those plants hitting our skin or we will be getting in trouble. We also have the bugs, the mosquitoes, which carry diseases. We have wood ticks that carry diseases. So all of these things, they have to be talked about, or someone going out to do it, they're taking chances that they don't know what they're taking chances, period.
Yeah, just the elements and the wildlife and everything out in the forest is a challenge. And especially, I mean, just that itself is a challenge, you know, going out and trying to rough it out in the woods, a challenge in itself, let alone trying to find, you know, this animal that's really rare, you know. So, and a lot of people make those mistakes or go out there and sometimes get themselves in trouble.
Yeah, they will. And sometimes it's not even their fault. I mean, really, they may even know about it. But like, what is the mosquito disease or the wood tick disease called again? I can't think of it off the top of my head.
Lyme, I think you get Lyme disease.
Well, Lyme, yes.
Yeah, that's
okay, so how, and how many researchers have you talked to that either have the like Lyme's disease or the ones from mosquitoes, the disease from mosquitoes? You know, there's a lot of researchers out there, and not just researchers, but hunters, too, because, you know, even though we may try to take precautions, I mean, when you're getting into this field, you have to also realize that you may walk out of it with Lyme's disease, and that's not a joke. So
no.
You have to really take precautions.
I think you guys know about the chiggers, don't you?
Oh, yes. I don't like
that
chiggers
red,
and I cannot laugh.
That red rash, absolutely. We have them here.
Texas
what,
has chiggers.
What a mess. Yeah, but these are all really good ideas, and I think they will help the research, the Bigfoot research community, because that's what it needs. It doesn't need to be ignored like a lot of so-called scientists do, and it was, you know, it was. I thought one of the worst stories I have ever seen on the news. I forgot where I found it, but it said some researchers are beginning to believe that UFO stories might be true. And I thought, if the state of science is such that they're just starting to believe they may be true, then these scientists have got their heads under the ground. They've got the ostrich effect going on. I mean, this is crazy. UFOs have been around since the dawn of time. There's so much about them everywhere. You know, obviously, people wouldn't make a lot of these things up if they weren't true. Because, I mean, it's a lot more trouble to go through a sighting experience and report than it is to not. So, I mean, you're saying it might be true? Well, you know. I thought that was silly. It might be true. You know.
But, you know,
death,
there's so many
be,
people who live in that box.
Well, it's like death might be true. I mean, we don't know. Just because whoever it is stops talking and communicating, we don't know if that's death. And I think that's what's funny is it's not repeatable. When you look at, what's his name? Who's my favorite? Neil deGrasse Tyson. He says unless you can repeat it, you don't know if it's a real scientific fact. Well, if somebody dies, you can't repeat that. So, I mean, all right, Neil, there you go. I'll stop being ridiculous, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
Matt, dig me out of this hole, please.
Well, I mean, we know the body, the flesh, it'll eventually die, but the energy when it leaves the body is the question, you know. Are you still... Or if you're, of course, you're still alive or whatever, but, you know, the soul or the energy, we can tell it leaves the body. And the body, flesh part might die, but the rest of you probably doesn't. We know that.
This is something that I'd like to talk on because I have died and I have come back. And, you know, after in the small time, and I'm not sure how long I was actually gone for, but in the small time that I was gone, I was in so many different places, and it was very, very vivid for me. And I know that, I mean, the way we can astral travel and everything else, the human body, when the human body dies, it does not, like you're saying, it does not mean that the energy is dying with it. It does not mean our souls die with it. It does not mean that our living is connected to our body, because it's not. Our life, our energy, our being is connected to energy. It's not connected to this fleshy thing we wear as a suit. That's my personal opinion.
Exactly.
Well put. Well, I think, you know, as we talk on Bigfoot and Company, and as we talk on Scarycast and Paranormal Down Under, as we talk on all these different shows, it seems as though a lot of these topics merge together, like the idea that there are a number of times when Bigfoot sightings are accompanied by a UFO sighting, and that's what we count on our friend Angelia Shear to to tell us about, as she did so well at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. So there's so much crossover. It's simply another world where all these things are. And some of us understand them. Some of us are comfortable with I've got to be careful. Some of us are comfortable with allowing them into our lives and believing, or whatever you want to say. So, you know, it's just a matter of they're all there. It's like there are two realities. One is inside the box where people do not want to think about anything that isn't something they can see with their eyes and smell with their nose and hear with their ears. And then there are others who want to believe or have experiences. So, I mean, and the strange sounds I've been hearing here in my house while the show's been going on makes me wonder. But that's another story. In any event, Jenna, you know, it's good getting to talk with you. Do you have maybe a couple more She Squatcher stories? Because people love your stories. People love hearing about the adventures you have. So give us a couple more stories, because I know that's what people like. I actually had a text. Someone said, we want to hear some more She Squatcher stories. And I said, I'll work on it. So give us another couple stories, if you would.
Okay, well, another one of my favorite stories is we had all gone out, and we were going out squatching one day, and we were driving, and we had happened to come across, Jen had said, stop the car. She had had this feeling. It was like she has this, she's connected with Bigfoot. It's a vibrational energy that she feels within herself when she feels that she's near either Bigfoot or Bigfoot evidence. She has just naturally, it's naturally been happening for her. And so we ended up finding, and I don't know if you guys have seen these out on our website or our Facebook page, but please do go out there and check it out if you can. We had found footprints leading up a hill, and this hill was a sand hill. And during the, I mean, the sand hill, Nikki and I tried to climb it. This thing was so steep. With every step that I took, because Nikki and I both climbed it, Jen was down taking the film. We had not walked on, of course, we did not walk on the actual footprints. We walked about 3-2 feet away from the footprints to make sure that we're not, you know, losing any kind of indent or anything or changing them in any way. And so with every step we took, we would sink down probably a half a step or more. So it was like crawling and crawling and crawling, and it was like the never-ending crawl. So we end up getting to the top, and I happen to have my camera with, because I like a lot of equipment on me at all times, and I have my Sony camera up, and I happen to turn around because something just kind of said, well, turn around. And so I did. And I looked down, and I noticed that the footprints just didn't go anywhere, you know, and all of a sudden I'm looking, you know, the hill went straight up, and then it went flat, like to a flat spot down for a little area. And so I thought, well, this is strange. And then I really took a look at the ground, and I thought, this is really strange. There's these circles within circles, and there was three sets of circles. And I don't know what they are. I don't know what made them, but I know they remind me in the way of a crop circle kind of a thing. But they were probably, oh gosh, if I had to guess, I'm not very good with measurements, but I'd probably say they were about half a yard thick in length. But it was as if somebody took something, and like they do in the crop circles, you know how everything is like moved a certain way, like it's like something was just like squished it, or frequency just made it move all a certain way. So there was these sticks and things, and they were all just squished and moved, and it looked just amazing. And so I took a picture of it. Go out there, check it out on our website, Facebook page. And I didn't know what they were, so I yelled down to Jen. I said, this is pictures. So anyway, I got those to her, and we decided, okay, you know, that's enough of this. Let's go down. We need to see if we can get these things cast, you know, get these casted. Some of these prints, because at this point these prints were huge, but they were also on a sandhill, so it's really hard. I don't know if anybody out there has ever tried to cast on a sandhill, but it's close to being impossible. And we didn't have everything we needed, which we found out. We ended up trying to cast it. We had some equipment there, but we didn't have the shovels to get it up when it was dried. So Jen and I said, well, we'll stay here, and you guys can go get the shovels and all the other equipment that we need. So, of course, you know, the two or three other people, they leave. Jen and I are sitting there, and Jen's like, oh, man, I don't know if we should have done that. She said, seriously, there's footprints going up the hill. I felt it. I feel like they're still here. And, you know, we're just, she's trying to freak me out. Well, I don't think she was trying. Didn't work. But she said, Jenna, she goes, you should not have brought your baggie of goodies, because I usually would bring my bars, my, like, health food bars or, like, my protein bars, because, you know, when you're out there, you're hungry, you just eat a protein bar, you're good. Well, that was dumb, because as a learning curve, I learned that, oh, yeah, there, they'd love my baggie of goodies. So as we waited, we sat there, and this was my first time of seeing what I saw, and I'm going to explain this. So we're waiting on everyone to get back, and as we wait, we're sitting on this little hill, and in front of us, there was this bunch of tall weeds, and we had two pieces of the night op equipment, and the piece I was looking at, I was just sitting there looking at these weeds, and as I was looking,
now, Jenna, real yeah. quick, about how tall were the weeds?
Oh, thank you. The weeds were probably about 3 to 5 feet tall.
So about 4 feet tall. That gives us a good
yeah.
general notion. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, and these weeds, so anyway, we're sitting on this little tiny hill right in front of the weeds, and we both had a piece of equipment, and Jen had said earlier, she goes, I think there's spirit people in there and fairies and things like that. And I was just looking, and I had this thing up to my eye. I had a unocular up to my eye, and I was looking, or no, I had the FLIR up to my eye. And it's a pocket FLIR. And so I was looking at this, these weeds, and all of a sudden I started realizing I'm making out something that looks like a gnome. But he's got his face turned slightly to the other way, like not looking at me. And I said, Jen, I said, it's so weird. It looks like a gnome. And she goes, really? Oh, we're cool. And I said, oh, my gosh. And I kept looking at it, and all of a sudden, it turned and looked at me, and I was like, oh, that's the first time that I had ever seen. I mean, I took that thing out of my eye, and I was like, oh, because, you know, when you're not ready for that, you know, because I had never seen it like that, not like that. So it was almost like it was, it's almost like it was partially cloaked itself. And it wasn't until it actually moved to look at me that I knew it was for real. It was just like, oh, my gosh. Because, I mean, you know when you're looking at something and you think you see it? Yeah. That was the first time I've ever seen that.
Two questions. Number one,
okay.
Was there evidence of some type of clothing on the gnome?
Yes. Are you talking about what it looked like, what it had on?
Yeah, did it have some type of clothing on that you could see,
oh, yeah.
or did you just see from the head up? Okay.
No. I saw the whole thing. I mean, it had the boots on. See, I saw more of, I didn't see as much as the inside as the outer edge, but I did see the inner part. It just was lighter. So it had a hat on, and it had a great big furry beard. And its shirt, it was buttons, but it wasn't buttons. It's hard to explain. But it was just kind of very loose. I could see it had boots on, but I don't remember exactly. I can't explain what the boots looked like, but I just didn't pay attention to those. But I was so shocked when it turned and looked at me that you kind of lose all aspect of time and what you're doing. And, I mean, have you ever seen anything like that? Have either one of you guys ever seen a gnome?
I have not.
No,
that's why I was gonna ask my next question. Was the face
okay.
very human looking?
No. I mean, it, of course, it had eyes. It had kind of a larger nose than humans. It looked similar to the pretend drawings. You know, like the kids' drawings, but it wasn't like that. It was more harsh. They looked
but
cute,
it was
friendly.
Eyes, Eyes, nose, mouth,
eyes,
and beard.
Eyes, nose, mouth. Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
What would you say? What were you saying about friendly?
Well, I was just saying that in kids' drawings and things like that, they look so friendly and like, hi-ho, hi-ho, we're off to go to, you know, they look like that. They look like the little guys. Well, this one didn't. It seemed more, the face was a little bit more pocked, not talked, but not as sweet and tidy. I don't know how to explain it. It was just a shock
maybe
of a
word,
lifetime.
A little rough, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. The word little rough nails it right there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and before that, when Jen had come to visit me in Texas, I believe it was in the last year, or no, maybe it was 2 years ago. Anyway, she had come down to Texas to visit me, and we had gotten these little, they're called chub rocks or something. Anyway, these, I wish I remember the name of them, but anyway, they're supposed to, you put them all over your different chakras, and it's supposed to clear everything and bring you peace and bring you clarity. And I actually saw a gnome there in my head, and I said, Jen, it's so weird. I said, I see a gnome, because she was doing her energy as well as putting these rocks on me. And she goes, okay, ask it questions. Because at this time, I had never seen a gnome. Anytime I ever saw anything in my head or visions or that, I never asked questions. I just saw it. I just viewed it. And so anyway, she said, well, ask it a question. And I don't even remember the first question I asked it, but I started asking it questions, and it got really crabby with me fast, because I said, Jen, he's being really crabby. And all of a sudden I saw him, and he looked at me, and he got really angry, and he started, and I didn't hear anything, but I could see him get, like, angry, and he showed me the mirror to say, you think that I'm angry? Look at you. You're being rude, you know, kind of a thing. Because I think I even used the word rude. So yeah, and I told Jen, and Jen started laughing. She goes, "Yeah, you don't. They're not. They don't take kindly to that. You got to be very nice to them." So it was just really strange. So yes, that. And let's see. I'm trying to think of another story. Do you have any other questions on that?
I don't. Do you, Matthew?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay.
That was a cool story. That's a very cool story. Yeah, give us. Yes, Matt?
I was gonna add something there, Jenny. You remember when we went out on the night investigation and we got something white?
Yes.
Okay, I went back to that location and there's nothing there. It's a drop off. It dropped like a backdrop. I need to take
really?
Some video. Yeah, I need to take some video and show you because our hair showed up white and what we recorded. White, and it appeared to be moving, but I went back to that area, it was like there was a little bluff. It had dropped down. So either whatever it was not there, but I need to take a video and send it and let you look at it, because that exact spot over there, it was like a little drop-off, like a little bluff there that drops down.
Oh, my goodness. I'd love to go back there. Yeah, will you send me a picture? Because that was another story I was going to bring up. I don't know. Have you told anyone that story about us going out that night?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I told quite a few people.
Okay. Have you said it on the radio show so they kind of know what you're talking about?
No, I haven't. I haven't talked about it on the show, actually.
Okay. Well, if you – just to kind of talk about it – Jen, Tammy, and I went out with Matthew Delf, and he brought us out to an area that is known for sightings. And isn't this a sanctuary, a Bigfoot sanctuary as well?
Yes, yes it is.
Okay, so we had gotten out of the car. Now this is Jen Cruz, as you know, and I don't know if you know, but you should know, she does remote viewing. And remote viewing is a way that we use our psychic ability to help us find Bigfoot and Bigfoot evidence. And so this is what she did, and she had said right away when we had pulled up in the car, she said, what direction are we? What direction are we? Because she was looking at this, at the map. And she said, okay, if this is the right direction, she said it's supposed to be right there. And as she was doing that, Tammy jumped out of the car with one of the FLIR, I believe it was the pocket FLIR, and she immediately turned the pocket FLIR into the area map that you're talking about. And in this area, we had, she didn't get it recording right away because she didn't know how. She was just like, boom, out there looking, and she was, I got to get this recording. And we were all trying to get out of the car and you know, get our stuff going, our equipment going. And so by the time we finally got this FLIR actually working and recording, we had missed a lot of action that she had seen. So she had actually seen something lift up a hand, scratch itself, some different things like that, which I didn't see. But, Matthew, did you get a good look at that? Because the one thing that we noticed when we were out there is your hair was completely white, Matt, and yeah. Tammy's hair was completely white. Now, what we saw out in the woods where you're saying that drop-off was completely yeah. white, or white. So our skin showed up dark, but the hair showed white. Now my question is, okay, I know spirit can hover. I know when people come, when spirit comes to me, they can hover. I also know that primates are in trees. Were there any trees back there, or was there nothing?
There were trees back there, but like I said, it was a drop-off. I'll have to send a video. But you can see what did record. It's on your guys' channel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've watched that many times. I'm just trying to figure out what the heck it was.
Yeah, because
I mean, it really
nothing.
Does.
I will I'll put the recording of the same exact area and compare to see what we got.
Boy, that would be great because, yeah, we had gotten out there, and you can go on Sheep Fletcher's official out on YouTube and check out. We've got the video. I think it's like it's the whole video from start to stop because we didn't want anybody to think we stopped it and started it, you know, for certain looks for the camera. We're not doing that. We're not about that. We're not about drama. We're just about getting it out there, you know. What we find, we're going to share with people, just like you, Matthew, you know. So, yeah, I'd love to see what you've got out there. But anyway, needless to say, we had found this evidence. And to us, it looked like a primate. To me, psychically, my senses told me it didn't feel like as much of a Bigfoot. It felt more unintelligent and more of a primate than anything. And I really, I'm wondering, too, if there are different levels of intelligence, you know, just like human beings, there are different levels of intelligence.
That's true. Whenever I got out of the car, I could feel a really strong, you could feel like there was something there when we first got there.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, it kind of faded away. But when we first got there, it was really, really super strong. And that's when we got that video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really exciting, and I can't wait to go there again. I hope you'll bring us all out there again. Maybe next time we can go camping or something.
I think they said it's a 2-day hike out there.
Wow.
That's where they've seen the most sightings, and they kind of discourage anybody that can't handle, you know, that kind of stuff to avoid it. But if sightings, they say, is about a 2-day hike in is where you get the most sightings at in this area up there.
Oh, nice. Well, I don't know if you guys want one more story, but if we have time, I can tell you one more story.
Okay. Absolutely, we do.
Wonderful. Well, this is dating back to the beginning of last spring. And going back to last spring, Jen and Nikki and I, Jen had remote viewed an area. And so Nikki was driving. She wasn't feeling very good. but she had said, okay, I think I see something. And Jen said, actually, this is, you know, this is the area. And Nikki said, I think I see something over there. Now, Jen always tells this story, but I'm just going to say, I wasn't ready. Learning curve, you know, it was one of the first few times of being out. And Jen was so ready. She was so gung-ho to get out of there get out into the field, because on one side she felt an aggressive Bigfoot. On the other side, she felt more a Bigfoot evidence. So immediately when she got out of the car, she went to the right, where toward the aggressive Bigfoot. And she said there was stones being thrown at her, so she decided to quickly go the other way, because she said it was saying, don't go here. You're not welcome here. So we decided to go the other way, and I wasn't ready, and Jen was, like, kind of getting really crabby with me, and I was like, okay, fine. You know, she was like, Jenna, come on. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, hey, we're three women. We don't always get along. Sometimes we don't. So anyway, finally, by the time I'm behind her, we look up, and in front of us is this huge, I mean, it's, I don't even know how tall it is. It's like, it's got these long trees, and it looks like it's a tower standing right in front of us. And you can see this again. You can see this also on our website, on our Facebook page, and on YouTube. You'll be able to see a lot of this stuff, pictures of what I'm talking about. And this tower was so amazing. I thought that was it. I thought that's all we were going to find. Now, I'm just going to tell you at the time, and I hope it's okay to say this, I was wearing a sticky bra. And a sticky bra is something that you place, you wear it as a bra, and you just stick it to your boobs, and then they are where they're supposed to be. Well, it was 95 degrees outside, and I decided, holy buckets, I'm sweating this thing off. And I had a pair of really light cuddle duds on, because I thought, okay, we have to be dressed comfortably, we have to be able to wear, you know, move, stretch, do whatever. So I decided to just rip off my sticky bra. So I ripped it off, put it in the car, and I thought, okay. And then I had this vest on. Well, I kept getting more and more hot and hot and hot. Finally, I took my vest off. And after seeing this tower, this is when I took my vest off, as I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't stand it. So I took off my vest. And then all of a sudden, we come upon a structure within 35 feet of where we were parked. And this is Native American land, you guys. This isn't land that's open to everyone. This is not land that people are on very often at all. This is not occupied at all very much. So anyway, we got back over there, and we got over to the structure, and I was like, oh my gosh, Jen, I got to get in the structure. I mean, this thing was huge. Jen explains it as being as long as a Walmart aisle. I don't know if I feel, well, probably the whole thing, but where I got into wasn't quite as long. It was really interesting because when we saw it, there was like this little doorway, and it had like a few sticks just kind of laying across it. And so I started moving the sticks, and I ended up breaking one. I went, oh, no, they're going to kill me. And I went, oh, don't say that, Jenna, don't say that, you know, and don't put that out in the universe. So anyway, I moved the sticks, and I said, I got to get in here. So I got in there, and I was literally on my knees, and I had a good 5-7 inches above my head. And, you know, when you're on your knees, that's pretty tall. I'm 5'5", and I've got all this room above my head. So I'm thinking, okay, this is so cool, and it was so long. So I decided to lay down in it, and I laid down in it, and I'm not even at the very beginning where it's before the door starts. I lay down, and I'm looking up, and all of these sticks and things were just like weaved together. And I just thought, my gosh, this is so amazing. And I told Jen, I said, it's crazy, because I said, this is, you know, it could rain. And she said, do you think it would come through? And I said, not very much. I don't think it would come through very much. And I said, this is really a nice coverage. You know, I said, I don't think this is something that, you know, like a structure where they'd sit and sleep in, I don't think. But I said, I think maybe it's more of a hiding place. Well, little did I realize then, now I believe it's something where they slept, because after I said that, I started feeling the ground, and there was no sticks. It was so soft. It was like laying on a bed of feathers. The ground had been worked up. There was no bugs. There were no little stems. There was nothing. It was so soft. And so I laid there, and I put my arms above my head just to give it, like, a lengthwise. Well, it was so long in there. It could have probably lengthwise fit two of me laying down. So probably, what, I'm 5'5"? You can,
maybe 12
you can do
feet.
The math. I can't. Thank
maybe,
you.
maybe 12 feet. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and it was probably even longer than that. But anyway, if we went down a little bit, where my arms were actually touching, because I moved myself back, there was a window type of thing. And I also saw this, it was just like a little pile of sticks. And I put my hand on the pile of sticks, and I just, it was really weird because I got this sensation of playing with sticks, like they were just there to play with. It was really odd. And I said, Jen, I said, this is weird. I said, I see the picture, and I just feel like this was a toy. Like these sticks were to play with right there by the window. So it was just an amazing experience. And then, you know, Jen and I, we get all of this recording and everything. And I told Jen, I said, my gosh, I said, I can see you. And Jen couldn't see me. So it was just an incredible experience. And we get all this footage home, and we start going through it. And we're watching it together, Jen and I, and Jen was like, oh, my gosh, that's amazing. And I look at it, you could see right through my outfit. You could see everything, including my non-broad boobs. I said, oh, my gosh, because it's cuddle duds, right? So you can totally see through these things. That's all I had on were these cuddle duds. So everything was sticking out. I was so embarrassed. And I said, Jen, I said, this is our best evidence ever. And she goes, Jen, we have to show it. Jenna, we have to show this to people. I said, you can't show this to people. I said, my whole tots are hanging out. I said, this is ridiculous. So we finally found someone to, you know, do, like, cut it in pieces where, you know, and maybe put a little X over the areas, but we were able
a
to show
help.
Some of the,
yeah.
So, but that was one of my favorites too, because that, it was just such an amazing experience getting into that structure. It was just amazing. I wish I would have worn a bra. So now we've got this whole thing where you have to be fully dressed, you have to be camera ready, and you have to be in a sports bra or a bra that will not fall off. So,
well, do you
that's
think that you'll ever get
and
back there? And, well, do you think that you'll be able to get back there and get some additional footage?
Oh, gosh, yeah. We actually went back during a later season, and it was as if they literally something, I shouldn't say they because I don't know what it was. When we went back there, it looked like it had been taken apart. And I'm not saying moved over, pushed over, anything like that. It almost looked like something had lifted these huge log trees and laid them beside it. You know what I mean? So it wasn't like something came in and damaged it and pushed it down. It was like it was meticulously placed, you know, so it didn't look like it did when we were there originally. So we were really disappointed. But, yeah, we're definitely we do go back there. So we're going back there this spring, and that's why I can't wait to get home. I'm just like, oh, I'm so excited.
Well, you know what, Jenna? We really appreciate you being with us. We are about a minute from closing time here on Bigfoot and Company. Matt, I want to say thank you to my co-host, Matt Delf. I appreciate you being here with us.
Well, thank you.
It's always good to have you. And Jenna Grover, of the She Squatchers, tell us the website address, and then we'll all say sayonara for this week.
All right. Well, you can find us at shesquatchers.com, or you can also email us at shesquatchers@yahoo.com. Find us on YouTube at She Squatchers Official, and then you can also find us on Facebook at She Squatchers Official. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, heck yeah. Will you come back and visit with us?
Anytime. You got it.
Great. Well, thanks. We will have you back for sure. Thanks to Matt. Thanks to Jenna. Thanks to everyone who's listening. We appreciate it. Shout out to Jackson down in Australia who's listening. Shout out to Jen Cruz. Shout out to Papa Stroh. Shout out to all of our friends. So until next week, this is Bigfoot and Company signing off. See you later.
Bye. Bye, everybody. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening.